November 24, 1971. A man in a suit and sunglasses walks into Portland International Airport, buys a one-way ticket under the name Dan Cooper, and boards a Northwest Orient flight to Seattle. Hours later, he jumps from the rear of the Boeing 727 with a parachute and $200,000 in cash into a freezing rainstorm at night over dense forest. No body, no parachute, no trace. For 45 years, the FBI chased shadows. They questioned former paratroopers, tracked serial numbers, dug up riverbanks. But in 2016, the case was officially closed. The hijacker who pulled off the most legendary unsolved crime in US history simply vanished. But here's the twist. New DNA evidence from Cooper's tie doesn't match known suspects. Hidden confessions have surfaced, and private investigators believe the government knows more than they ever admitted. Did D.B. Cooper die in the jump? Or did he live out the rest of his life watching the world chase ghosts? So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favourite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Man in Seat 18C. The afternoon was unremarkable. Rain drizzled over Portland International Airport, washing the tarmac in a cold sheen. It was the day before Thanksgiving, 1971, when most people were thinking about turkey, family, and overbooked flights. But at 2:00 p.m., a man walked into the airport terminal and did something that would become legend. He was average height, about 5'10", dressed in a dark suit, skinny black tie, and white shirt. He wore loafers polished to a military shine and carried a black attaché case. His age, maybe 40s. His demeanour, calm. He handed over $20 cash and gave the name Dan Cooper. It wasn't until later that a newswire typo would rename him DB, a label that would define the most mysterious hijacker in American history. Flight 305 was a short hop, just 30 minutes from Portland to Seattle, a Boeing 727 with 36 passengers. Cooper took seat 18C. He ordered a bourbon and soda, lit a cigarette, and watched the grey skies thicken through his window. The plane lifted off at 2:50 p.m. By 3, Cooper handed the stewardess, Florence Schaffner, a note. At first, she didn't read it. "I thought it was just another guy giving me his number," she would later say. But when he leaned in and whispered, "Miss, you better read that note. I have a bomb," her casual smile vanished. Inside the note, neat all caps block lettering, "I have a bomb in my briefcase. I want you to sit next to me." Florence obeyed. Cooper opened the case just enough for her to glimpse 8 red cylinders and wires. "Tell the captain," he said, and handed over his demands. $200,000 in cash, 4 parachutes, 2 front, 2 back, and a fuel truck ready in Seattle for a refueling stop. He never shouted, never threatened the passengers, never panicked. 3:20 p.m., inside the cockpit, Captain William Scott received the news mid-flight. Cooper's instructions were clear. Land at Seattle, Tacoma, allow no law enforcement near the plane, and deliver the ransom without tricks. The crew alerted air traffic control, who immediately contacted the FBI. FBI Special Agent Ralph Himmelsbach was the first to take the call. "We didn't know what we were dealing with," he later recalled. "Hijackings weren't rare back then, but this wasn't your average skyjacker." There was something eerie about how composed Cooper was. No ranting, no politics, no ideology. Just money. While the passengers were told there was a mechanical issue, the pilot circled Seattle for nearly 2 hours to give authorities time to gather the ransom. Northwest Orient's president, Donald Nyrop, approved the payment. FBI agents rushed to gather $200,000 in small, unmarked bills, 20s mostly, and 4 parachutes. One of the chutes came from a skydiving school. Another was a dummy used for training. They had no idea Cooper would later inspect each one with surgical precision. Verhust 45 PM, Seattle-Tacoma Airport flight. 3:05, finally touched down. The cabin lights were dimmed. Passengers remained calm. Outside, emergency lights blinked in the rain, and unmarked vehicles idled in the distance. Florence brought the cash and parachutes back to Cooper. Only then did he allow the passengers to disembark. He tipped me a 20 and said, "Thanks for being so professional," Florence remembered. The crew stayed on board, PM his instructions. But what Cooper did next was where the story changed forever. He gave new orders. "Fly to Mexico City. Keep the plane below 10,000 feet. Maintain a speed under 200 knots. Landing gear down, cabin depressurized." None of this made sense for a normal flight, but it made perfect sense for a parachute jump. 7:40 PM, airborne again with 5 crew members still aboard. Flight 305 lifted off once more. It was pitch black outside, with storm clouds and a freezing rainstorm below. Somewhere over southern Washington, near the Lewis River Valley, the plane's rear stairway indicator lit up in the cockpit. At 8:13 PM, the tail of the aircraft bounced. The pressure shifted. Something or someone had left the plane. D.B. Cooper was gone. The aftermath. When the flight landed in Reno, Nevada, the FBI swarmed it. But the only thing left behind was a thin black tie on Cooper's seat back. Inside the tie's clip, skin cells, now frozen in an evidence locker. The manhunt was immediate and massive. Military helicopters, state troopers, local police, and hundreds of volunteers searched the rugged terrain of southwest Washington. But it was all guesswork. Cooper had jumped into 200 mm4 winds, rain, and sub-zero temperatures, at night, over wilderness. No body, no chute, no trace. The FBI published the serial numbers of the bills nationwide. Every casino, bank, and gas station in America was told to report any $20 bill that matched. For 9 years, not one surfaced. Then came 1980. A young boy named Brian Ingram was digging a fire pit with his father along the Columbia River near Vancouver, Washington, buried in the sand. 3 bundles of deteriorated $20 bills, totaling $5,100. The serial numbers matched. The money had decayed, rotted from water and time, but it proved something. D.B. Cooper had landed, or at least the money had. Suspects, lies, and mistakes. The FBI interviewed hundreds of people. They dug through military records, ex-convict lists, airline employees. But time and again, leads went cold. Richard McCoy was a leading suspect. A Vietnam veteran and skydiver, McCoy pulled off a nearly identical hijacking 5 months later, using a fake hand grenade and parachuting out of a similar aircraft with $500,000. He was caught, escaped from prison, and was eventually killed in a shootout with the FBI. But McCoy's family said he was in Utah during the Cooper jump. The FBI dropped him. Dwayne Weber, a career criminal, confessed on his deathbed in 1995, "I'm Dan Cooper." His widow recalled him talking in his sleep about a hijack. He had an old knee injury, knew details about the case, and left behind a Northwest Orient ticket stub. DNA didn't match. Kenneth Christensen, a former paratrooper and Northwest Orient employee, matched Cooper's general profile. He spoke French, had a grudge against the airline, and came into money shortly after the hijacking. But no hard evidence. Years passed, the case grew colder and colder. Then came a break no one saw coming. DNA on the tie. In 2001, the FBI used new forensic tools to examine the tie Cooper left behind. They found particles of rare earth metals, cerium, strontium sulfide, titanium, used in Boeing aircraft factories. The tie was traced to engineers or chemical workers. a list of suspects emerged, including one man, Lynn Doyle Cooper, whose niece claimed he disappeared after Thanksgiving 1971 and returned days later, injured and shaken. He matched the sketch. He had the right skills. He had the motive. But again, no DNA match, no confession, no money trail, nothing stuck. Case closed or covered up. In 2016, the FBI officially closed the case. "We've exhausted all credible leads," the agency said. Critics were stunned. Amateur sleuths accused the government of giving up too early. Others hinted at something darker. The Cooper might have been a government insider, or worse, a test run gone wrong. Was the jump survivable? Most experts say yes, with training. Cooper chose that specific plane because the rear air stair could be lowered mid-flight. Only certain models allowed this. He knew how to control the plane's speed, altitude, and pressure. He wore a clip-on tie, likely to protect his real identity. He chose Thanksgiving Eve, one of the busiest travel days of the year. His plan was precise, professional, and timed to chaos. This was no thrill seeker. This was a man who understood aviation, physics, and misdirection. He was never seen again. But what if he never left the country? What if the FBI knew he lived and just couldn't catch him? Chapter 2. Legends, Lies, and DNA. Theories That Won't Die. It's one thing to disappear. It's another to vanish so completely that the government gives up. For more than 50 years, D.B. Cooper has existed somewhere between criminal folklore and cold case curiosity. But for the FBI, amateur sleuths, and a generation raised on conspiracy, one question has never died. Did he survive? If he died mid-air, where's the body? If he lived, where did he go? And perhaps most disturbingly, why has no one ever come forward with definitive proof? The money trail that never led anywhere. Let's start with the money. $200,000 in 1971 equals over $1.5 million today. Serial numbers were recorded on every $20 bill Cooper received, yet only three bundles, totaling $5,800, have ever been recovered, found buried along the Columbia River 9 years later. That recovery opened more questions than it answered. The bills were eroded, yet stacked in rubber bands that hadn't fully decomposed. Did Cooper lose them during the jump? Did someone plant them there later? Could the riverbank even carry bundles that far upstream from the estimated jump zone? In 2011, scientific analysis revealed the money had likely been buried at least 6 months after the hijacking, meaning the burial site was tampered with. Someone moved it. Someone knew. The letters. Months after the hijacking, a series of taunting letters were mailed to newspapers. One read, "I am alive and doing well in the Northwest. I am not a boastful man, but I do have a sense of humour. This letter is to let you know that I am not dead, but just enjoying the fruits of my labour." Some were signed D.B. Cooper, others just Cooper. The FBI at the time dismissed them as hoaxes. But in 2017, handwriting experts compared one letter to known writing samples from Robert Rackstraw, a former Army explosives expert, CIA contractor, and Vietnam veteran. The results were inconclusive, but compelling. Rackstraw had the training, the skill set, and even a criminal record involving fake identities and aircraft theft. When confronted in 2018 by a History Channel documentary team, he grinned and said, "I could have been him. I'm not saying I was, but I could have been." That smirk launched a frenzy. The DNA mystery. In 2001, the FBI pulled DNA from the tie Cooper left on the seat. Years later, they admitted it came from three separate individuals, but only one was male, and it didn't match any key suspect, Rackstraw, McCoy, Christensen, or Weber. Critics cried foul. Why didn't they test it sooner? Why not release the full profile publicly, eh? Some believe the sample was contaminated. Others believe the tie was a red herring, planted or swapped. Either way, the DNA failed to close the case. Instead, it cracked it open again. In 2020, Eric Ulis, an independent researcher, obtained access to previously hidden FBI files. Inside, lab reports stating the tie had particles used in rare aerospace manufacturing, not just commercial aviation, which raises the question, was Cooper not just a Boeing worker, but part of a classified government project? Operation Norjak. The FBI's secret files. For years, the Cooper case was classified under Norjak, Northwest Hijacking, a top-tier FBI investigation. Dozens of leads were sealed, witness names redacted, reports never released. In 2016, when the case was closed, the FBI cited limited resources and lack of new leads. But leaked memos suggested the Bureau had become convinced Cooper died in the jump, based on wind speed, terrain, and lack of a survival signal. But those assumptions came under fire when it was revealed the Bureau never searched several possible landing zones, including one near Tena Bar, where the money was found. Were they misled? Or covering something up? The psychology of Cooper. Let's step back. D.B. Cooper was no ordinary criminal. He didn't panic. He planned for months. He avoided detection. He studied flight manuals, parachutes, aircraft systems. He chose a Boeing 727 because of its rear air stair, a rare feature. He knew how to depressurize the cabin. He demanded two back parachutes and two front ones, so authorities couldn't risk sabotaging them in case he forced a hostage to jump. He used fear as leverage. He used politeness as camouflage. He left behind no physical fingerprint. And he timed the entire hijack for maximum distraction, the day before Thanksgiving, when the news cycle would be overloaded and police departments under strain. This wasn't desperation. This was design. The sketch and the survivors. Florence Schaffner, the flight attendant, and Tina Mucklow, who sat beside him for hours, described him as calm, respectful, and oddly, forgettable. He wasn't scary, Mucklow told interviewers. He was precise. He never said a word more than he needed to. The composite sketch drawn from her memory remains iconic. Thin lips, sunglasses, slicked back hair. But in reality, it might be misleading. He could have been wearing prosthetics, says FBI veteran Larry Carr. A fake jawline, a padded jacket. He didn't want to be remembered accurately. What if the sketch we all know is wrong? The world's most famous unsolved hijacking D.B. Cooper is now a brand. His story has inspired movies, songs, t-shirts, and bars named in his honor. A cult of amateur detectives has built online forums, documentaries, even simulation dives in the Pacific Northwest trying to recreate his escape. But in the swirl of legends and lies, some uncomfortable facts remain. The FBI never found the parachute. No eyewitness has ever positively ID'd any suspect. No body has ever been recovered. Only $15,800 was found, and it was buried deliberately. The DNA on the tie is still unexplained. Theories and conspiracies. Did he survive? Let's break down the top theories still driving online communities and investigators. Theory. Died on impact. The storm, terrain, and night jump were too much. Cooper died in the forest, eaten by animals or buried under snow. Counterpoint, no remains ever found. Experts say experienced jumpers could survive such conditions. Theory number two, he was an ex-CIA asset. Cooper's knowledge of aircraft, skydiving, and the FBI's procedures suggest military or intelligence background. Supporting evidence, parallels to Robert Rackstraw's career. Boeing tie particles, parachute expertise, conspiracy. He was allowed to disappear or use the jump to exit a black ops career. Theory number three, It was an inside job. Cooper may have worked for the airline, an airport, or even Boeing. Supporting evidence. Rare metals on the tie. Knowledge of aircraft specs. Knew how to avoid detection. Mystery. Why haven't any co-workers ever come forward? Theory. Before. Still alive. Living quietly. The most popular belief among Cooperites. He pulled it off, started over with a new identity, maybe abroad. Supporting evidence. 0 confirmed sightings. Clean exit. The note and tie were designed to leave minimal trace. Speculation. He may have returned to society under an alias, possibly still alive, in his 90s. The final twist. 2024 DNA investigation. In April 2024, a private lab run by volunteer forensic scientists announced a discovery. A partial DNA profile retrieved from one of Cooper's cigarette butts, found in the seatback ashtray, was matched to a known surname in the Pacific Northwest. The lab, citing legal risks, hasn't released the name. But here's what they did say. The man known as D.B. Cooper likely lived in Washington or Oregon. He worked in aerospace, he had military experience, and he died sometime after 2003. This changes everything, because if the name is confirmed and relatives still alive, there could still be lawsuits, answers, even confessions. Final questions for you, the listener. D.B. Cooper didn't just jump from a plane. He jumped from reality into folklore. He remains a symbol of rebellion, mystery, and the kind of criminal that leaves no victims, just questions. But behind the sunglasses and tie is a man who outwitted the world for half a century. So what do you believe? Was he a ghost in the system, or a man hiding in plain sight? Did he die in the jump, or live to read about himself in the paper every year? And if you found out your neighbour, your uncle, your father, was Cooper, would you turn him in? Or would you let the legend live? Bonus segment. Theories and conspiracies. Did he survive? New DNA tests? Now available as a bonus episode. We break down the 2024 DNA results, Rackstraw's last interview, and dissect whether the FBI's silence means they've already found their man and chosen not to tell the public. Listen now on our feed.